In the meantime, we'd bring some sunshine this afternoon. Today, we're discussing a genre of music, rapso. And with us in the studio is rapso artist Ataclan and music analyst Nigel Campbell. Now, we began the program with a piece of rapso music.
Yeah, from the foundation days.
Not quite. At Get a client's piece that was recorded in 2011.
No. Get off the radio.
that preceded the start, yes. At a client's, that's not a new piece, right? It was recorded
in
2011.
But
it's still very relevant today.
Seems that way. I've been re-releasing songs on my YouTube channel. And the public seems to be like just responding. I remember getting a call from Shamin Babulal about a song that I released called Ram Logan Whining, which I released in the SOE. And she wanted to know, how did I record a song so fast when he was arrested? Can I say that? I was like, no, it's an older song. It's from 2013, while he was the AG and everyone was afraid to play it and it didn't get any airplay. But she was so shocked when she heard the quality of it. And I re-released it. And I released a song called Roomba, which the chorus basically says, I sometimes wonder how did Venezuela get so hard? All them Spanish fly want to come over Trinidad. And I released that in 2000. So people are now kind of like, whoa, you know? And it's because of social media. Obviously, we have some sort of void in terms of how the media...
It speaks to how this genre of music has survived, right, despite being prominent on the airwaves, let's say.
Right. Exactly. Agreed. Rapso music is a foundation, if you think about calypso and soca, you know. Rapso music obviously has some cross the Atlantic ties, you know. So when you talk about the griot, the peregrinade, you're going back into history, you're going back into Africanism, you know. And so it has a root that lend to even some of our genres that we know today that are popular.
How would we define rapso? As opposed to there is now the growth of the spoken word kind of music.
Well, how do you define rapso? Resistance has a beautiful line, the power of the word and the rhythm of the word, mm-hmm, right? And you're talking about spoken word and even rap to a point, but what rapso definitely is our dialect. It's us, by us, for us, or in a sense, right? And they have the kind of cadence of spoken word, but we sometimes have a kind of sing-along and they have harmony. Certainly, there's these generations of rap, so, you know, we know about Lancelot Lane, who played this song.
How is it different now from the days of the pioneers, Lancelot Lane and Byron?
I think there's certainly some melodic elements in it, right? There's a lot more musicality to it. The early ones were just basic chanting, and that we understand what the word chanting is. Now we have... At a client of point, but certainly fellas like Trey Canal and Kindred and they who came out in the 90s, early 2000s.
No,
they had a lot of melodic element in the music that was a base of the thing. So audiences flocked to the music, sometimes unfortunately missing the message. And I think that is the key thing about rap. So like a lot of our calypso, it's about the word, it's about the message.
Agreed. We have to be careful with your timeline though. Right?
Your timeline.
Yes, Lancelot Lane, Cheryl Byron. Right. You have Resistance Mandela and the Network Rhythm Band. Then in the early 90s, had Kindred, Homefront, which I was a part of that group.
As Ozzy,
right? Yes, right. Then between 93 and 95 to 96, even Ras Shorty I got involved, where he had a rapso song. Mm-hmm. And he would be performing it in Rapso Night. I was training with him at that point.
Yes.
Right? Then came 97 when I had my first hit in terms of Flambeau in the Carnival, and you found that we had a lot of rapso involved in the Carnival, but even with the label that Kindred was on. So in terms of the timeline, you found that the youth culture started to enter the soca as well in terms of rapso music.
Mm-hmm. When was the Kiskiri Caravan? Was the Kiskiri Caravan ever part of that rapso?
Yes, Kiskiri Caravan was 92. 92 and 93. And Kiskidi Caravan was a nationwide audition for the best singers and spitters, because you know, like that rapping style. You know, and in terms of when you say to a point, rapso is like rapso is Trinidad rap.
Okay.
Straight up, every country in the world that you go to, there's street poetry.
There's
always any artist who's analyzing the structure, and especially in the Caribbean where we have this post-colonial construct, right? You find, you know, so dance hall is sort of like that, and rapso is Trinidad rap. Whether you want, it's just in your own accent.
Definitely, you know? The accent is so important and key.
If you want to say it's Trinidad dance hall, yes, it's Trinidad dance hall in your accent.
So given that definition, does rapso remain with a sort of insular appeal, and does that prevent it from reaching beyond this demographic?
I wouldn't agree. Well, I've had, you see, we can look at things, you see, for some reason, the way some people in Trinidad or some of the media, they view rapso, I would say is like that little drum and beats music, you know, and they put it in a box. It's the other. You know, and I've had duets with everyone from Marshall Montano to Bungie Garland to Join Pop to Shorty I, Shadow, Andre Tanker, you name it. Even Jamaican Sizzler, Bunny Ruggs, may he rest in peace as well. Demos. So to me, I don't look at rapso as that genre on the side. You know, if the media is doing that,
That's them.
That's on them, you know. And if it is that, to me, when the first time I went to Jamaica, I realized what was some of the problems that we had here. As a songwriter here, it takes you about 5 years to unwrap your mind from 80s melodies, 80s American rock melodies, because the ownership class, if you go any plaza right now, I wouldn't really call names, you will still hear that genre of music playing. So you see it in the early 90s, late 90s, and soakers, even some of the best soca writers, they were still, you know, it was a lot of 80s melodies. And if you know,
they were trying to cross over.
Well,
that had always been this.
Now, explain to me this 80s melody.
I mean,
you understand it. I don't grasp.
Well, you know, songs from the 80s, really and truly. Songs from, American songs from the 80s, when, or late 80s, when, and early 90s, when the influx of cable started to sort of affect our airplay, per se, or our concept of what the content is supposed to be. You know, so as a songwriter, when you first start writing song, you realize that you're really affected by the things that you hear on media. If in terms of, like, for instance, in Jamaica, the Prime Minister at the time in the 80s, Edward Seaga, he had put a ban on anything foreign for like 3 years. And after the first year, the industry was up and running, because he had family who had studios and stuff
that
was closing, and record company was closing down and stuff. My thing, what I realized, like, if you growing up as a young man in Jamaica and you get to see and hear yourself every day, by the time you're 16, your concept of identity and self is much stronger. And I think this is what we lack in Trinidad. We have never placed enough emphasis on the legislation for the business of music. And this is why it is failing, because we have a lot of government subsidies for things and technocrats. And for instance, like UTT, all the courses for music and musicians and engineers, they're going to meet a wall. All these young people who are learning to do video editing and stuff, they're going to meet a wall, and the wall is created by the very legislators, you know. Because I remember in the 90s, or probably the early 2000s, rest his soul, Prime Minister Patrick Manning, he did this, a tax break for businesses that invest in young
in artists.
Invest
in audiovisual and the arts. Yeah.
Right? And what happened was, we had a lot of companies, you know, some people who had family who were singing, they were investing big time in young artists, right? I wasn't one of them. But we had a huge amount of albums being produced, and nowhere for it to be played because there was no
One of the things that happened in 2003-2004, the state had a broadcast policy, which, unless it's superseded, I think it's still in train effectively. And there was a very specific request, certainly by the musicians and the artists, to have quotas, legislated quotas, mm-hmm. for airplay. And it was stated within the preamble of the policy that the state was against that, right? And the state said, well, they will use the government stations to allow for a wider distribution of local content. Now, we all know that CNMG was created after that time. When it was closed down recently, I think Maxi Coffey was a minister, he stated it was like $20 million in the red, right? So the idea that the state was going to enter into this thing about local content failed because one of the initial things was that they had to go out there and compete with TV6 and this station and among others, right? And they failed effectively. Well, the new iteration of TTT seems to be going local. They're pushing that kind of thing. I'm not sure what's happening on the radio station that those are the CNMG radio stations in that network. But certainly the state was against it. And I've always posited that they were against it, not necessarily because they were against local content. But we signed bilateral agreements, trade agreements, and we joined WIPO and these kind of things. And part and parcel of those trade agreements is the idea that we must not treat our product any different from a foreign product, which effectively comes down to you can't legislate quotas, right? You can't legislate. You have to have a free market, effectively. And Canada is part of that, but Canada has a content legislation.
Yeah.
We were not brave enough to do that. We wanted to sell oil and gas, and if you can't sell oil and gas to the world, you have to follow the rules. And we stick to rules regardless if they make sense to us or not. And that's unfortunate because it really did affect. I remember as you talk about Chambers, I remember before that, when you spoke about Manning, before that, George Chambers, when he was the Prime Minister, he had put a ban on a whole set of foreign things. Remember, he was banning raisins and apples and pears and that kind of stuff.
Foreign exchange.
You had an EC0 or some kind of thing, was the kind of thing they had. But what became apparent, as Arthur Klein has suggested here, is that there was a kind of birth, a kind of renaissance in local certain publications. I was noting people writing books and publishing them, right? I really, at that time, wasn't counting how many records were being produced and that kind of stuff. Certainly, as I said, there was a time, certainly in the late 90s, approaching the 2000s, when the record industry globally was booming, and that was selling physical things called CDs, right? It kind of peaked at the 2000s, so everybody was making records. Arthur Klein is right. There was limited airplay, certainly for Rapso, and there was a situation, I think, critically, when we had an idea that there were conglomerates that were owning radio stations, right? Of course, we hear quite often from a lot of persons about the idea of a mafia, a soca mafia. I had a slight different opinion on that. I'm not saying that artists are not blacklisted from particular radio stations. I'm not saying that stations don't identify, well, I only want to play this kind of music because this is a market and my station's business model is exclusively about advertising, and for some reason they believe that their buyers want to listen to foreign pop music. But I've also posited that at the time, we certainly have 36 radio stations now. At the time, we may have had less than 36. But if you're telling me that three stations are not playing music out of, let's assume, 18 music stations, I'm not necessarily going to think that those three stations are also influencing the other 15 stations in terms of how their music is played. That is just me. I'm just, the straight evidence doesn't show that to me. But I understand and I hear what they're saying. I also understand and I hear what they're also arguing about quotas. How this all ends up specific to rap, so is that the other thing that has to happen is that we have to produce a lot of content. And I'm not sure that in numbers, we produce a lot of soca at carnival time. We don't produce a lot of soca in August. And the numbers at carnival time, if the numbers nowadays, they're talking about almost 1,000, could be more than plenty hundreds. Let's assume that. We don't produce that amount in all the other genres.
I tend to disagree.
Go ahead. Let's have a conversation.
Let me take you back to even 1995, when it had Carrie Fester here.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we had I was tasked with the youth stage, because Attila Spring and I and myself, we sent in a proposal.
Yes.
Because we noticed that there was not a youth arm.
Uh-huh.
And we got a budget to have a youth arm, which was later written in the the write-up in the papers was there was one of the most successful parts of Cari Festival 1995.
In terms of audience support?
Yes, and just smoothness of running and entertainment. In that, we had a youth symposium. Media and the Young Mind, right? It was in Central Bank Auditorium. Mm-hmm. And we had the top DJs at the time. I don't want to put them on blast, you know, who are always accused of the whole soca mafia scenario. And we have to remember as well, in the early 90s, even as back 93, 94, 95, 96, soca still wasn't being played after Carnival. You know, I remember being in a popular club, and if you play half a soca, the DJs, and they have their Jamaican accent, local DJs, they would apologize. I remember one scenario.
What were the audiences doing? If an audience heard a soca in April?
Like, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Right? I remember one occasion, a popular DJ, he played half a Arrow, Hot, Hot, Hot. And before playing it, he said, you know, we had to play something for everybody, and then half of it played, and I'll ride back to regular, and, you know, so that perception that local music was playing after Carnival then, even soca was under pressure, right? So it wasn't just rap, so, you know. So let me take you to the youth symposium. We have a couple of DJs on stage, some the most popular in the country at the time. I remember Man Warren was chair. I remember Jillian Goddard was there, and Attila was also on the stage. I was on the stage, and the auditorium was full with UE students. And the argument was, why are we not hearing ourselves on the radio? And their reply, I even have the article in my phone, so was like, we have to give the people what they want, and what they want is a dance hall, right? And some of the students were arguing that's not true. And my argument was, okay, if in 1992 and 1993, which was like this 2 and 3 years ago, 70,000 youths in the stadium, we packed venues all around the country, stadiums and venues all around the country with the Kiskidi Caravan, how in 2 years all those people, the whole nation, not interested in local music? This can't be true, right? So there has been that argument, and then like by 96, a lot of soca was taken off in terms of the youth culture. And even one of those DJs wanted to be a soca artist as well. Right? So there's a hypocrisy in the whole thing. And one of my, I always say to young, there's a young, like for instance, last week, a young man up the hill, up in Dawson, Lavantel, he came, a young, you know, Rasta youth who's, he wanted to sing a reggae for me. Listen to his song, amazing writer, a young man, my name is Hotep. And positive music, but in a Jamaican accent. And I was conversing with him, and I was saying, you have a singing voice. You know, you have an amazing singing voice. Why don't you just sing it in your own accent? And he was amazed that I could tell him, look, I've recorded albums in Jamaica. I've recorded with some of Jamaica's, I've collabs with some of Jamaica's, even Jamaica first Grammy award winner. And I play the song for him. I say, you could do it in your own accent. If I could record in Jamaica with some of the greatest musicians and producers, why not just sing this amazing piece of work that people need to hear, you know, in your own accent? And we have a thing about not representing our identity, and media has a lot to do with it, you know, as far as I can see.
We're talking about reaching to the youth. I heard Brother Resistance on his radio program on 995 yesterday had a lot of young voices having a ball of a time. And I said to myself, Resistance reaching out to the young people, boy.
Well, and from way back when.
Always.
That's not a new thing.
Resistance, tell me about the participation and appreciation of young people. And Resistance has just joined us, audience, in Rapso music.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the power of the Rapso music and the fact that it has stamped its whatever they call longevity on the music scene is because of the involvement of the young people in the music. I mean that at one time, while we created the Festival of Rapso and the Oral Tradition Rapso Fest, when we surveyed the landscape, we found ourselves in a corner. It was just network with a band, you know, and if for one reason or the other, the Trinidadian world could have silenced us, then that might be the end of the music. Would be like Spooge and them different kind of music where people hold on to it as their personal music. When in truth and in fact, music is not yours, right? So we found the important thing to do was to open the door and invite all the people who were interested or who was doing some kind of sort of something with the power of the word in their own way. We say welcome. And when we bring you in, it wasn't to point out to you or to teach you anything. It was fair to say, let us gather here and let us share the work that we have. Share whatever you do, the way you just do it, you know, your feeling, your expression, wherever you come from, that bring it to this music. Come in the room with that. And I think that was the most important move we ever make, you know. So when Kindred went up on a stage in City Hall and said, this is how rap song music going to song in the future. And some of the people in the audience said, shoot, what's wrong with them at all? These little fellas, they're fast, eh? And I said, well, yeah, they're supposed to be fast. Yeah. You know that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And that started a whole wave because younger people who were in school and that kind of thing still could identify with them. But I know them from around the corner by so, or them just leave school, or them was going to be school. And it was a closer link than where we were, because by that time we were seen as old guys. Eh? Some old people just come to me and say, I can remember when you come in my school, are you coming over RC? And look at the person and say, wow. You know that kind of thing? So that wave, and that wave brought Ataclan and Homefront and a whole. It was so beautiful.
Now, I'm not certainly not part of the music industry, yeah. But when I hear some of the major label producers, and a few interviews I may see on TV or online or so, they always quite often speak about for the music, for songs and so to have a broader appeal, they seem to prefer music that is not messagey. And rapso is all about message.
Well, I think in the music industry generally, it have this sort of consideration by most of the producers and that kind of thing. I mean, when I look at, if you look at North America, people like Curtis Mayfield and them, you know, they break the ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, Curtis Mayfield and break the ceiling Marvin Gaye. When Marvin Gaye was doing the album,
yeah,
they said, what were you doing?
Marvin Gaye was
doing, boy, and look how long you're in the studio and they can't come out yet.
Mm.
And where you're going with that, this thematic album, where you going with that? You know, and when the album come on, like, whoa. Yeah, you know, so there's always this.
I think one of the things we have
But to whom does that apply in today's age?
To who does what apply?
That kind of heavy message music.
It applies to everybody. The message in the music is so important because music is a vehicle for education, and in our context, a re-education process, because we still fighting up here with the colonial Jambian thing, you know. Seriously, we still fighting up here with that. So for us, music helps us as a people to establish who we are, to make our statement in the world, and that's extremely important for us, because when we look around, what else is doing in our education system?
So tell me a song
that
is in your repertoire,
mm-hmm.
that speaks to what is happening in our society, but has a global message.
Well, most of my material is like that, because as I sit here, most of my live performances have been outside of the boundaries of Trinidad and Tobago.
Okay, so you know, on that point, I remember there was a time when I used to observe that you had a lot of gigs in Europe and Norway,
right.
And so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, wow, there certainly is a stream of an audience in Europe and that part of the world about which people like me are not aware.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind, do you still get those kind of invitations? And are those, do you find that those audiences seem to be more appreciative than your own at home?
Well, I wouldn't want to measure in terms of the level of appreciation, but certainly the way in which the artists are treated in those situations are much more, you know, you feel good, you feel it like yourself, you know. When you sign a contract, you sign a contract. When you come in a dressing room, it's a dressing room. Mm-hmm. They have water for you to drink and things like this. If you're in Trinidad and you ask the man, where's the water? He says, so you couldn't walk with your own water?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Man, he says, Sandy Penny, I'm on, you had to bring water for you, too.
Mm. You know that kind of reason? There's no green room. Yeah, yeah.
So, so there's a difference. Uh-huh. You know, but, and yes, I still do those things. Because just last year,
we tend to treat our artists and people in generally with gross disrespect.
Yeah, last year I did, in November, I did the London Jazz Festival celebrating the Windrush Generation. I did that show with Sparrow, Rose, and a wicked trainer, I didn't put his name, Anthony Joseph, you know. And prior to that, I did, about a couple months before that, I did a festival in Paris, just on the outskirts of Paris. So I still do those kind of things much more than I appear on the stage here. But I must appear on the stage here because this is where I'm connected, you know, and I would never say, well, things so nice outside, I will leave here and stay out there and
but
do what
I do. But when last did you get a good paying gig in Trinidad?
Well, it is not good paying gigs in Trinidad for me. So I can't answer that question so good.
He performed as jazz artist on the greens.
I do what I have to do in Trinidad. I don't think about it.
A shameless plug.
A shameless plug. But what I want to say, Dominic, is that the music, you said that you saw these interviews with record labels on television or whatever. The music industry, global music, is very fragmented. So the North America is North America, Europe is Europe, Africa, Asia, the Caribbean, right? And you really and truly have to break into each one of those markets. And breaking into those markets is not a kind of uniform thing.
Yes.
It's different motive, different MOs for different markets, as it was, right? I've always thought, based on the kind of anecdotal evidence, going back all the way to the 60s, that the European and the UK market was much easier for Caribbean artists, mm-hmm. with a message to get into. And of course, the classic example of that is Bob Marley. Bob Marley sang songs that had messages. Man sang Haile Selassie's speech. As a song, right? And Europe embraced him and loved him. He had a big following in North America, not saying that. He also had somebody behind him. And that is a very critical thing in the music industry right nowadays, right? You have to have a person who's backing you. This guy called Chris Blackwell is the biggest thing that ever happened to reggae music in the world. I point that out there. We could have arguments and conversations. Chris Blackwell is huge for that, right? Our music, soca, rapso, chutney, whatever, doesn't have a figure as large as Chris Blackwell. Back in the 50s, they may have had a potential, a kind of a light, when Belafonte did this record called Calypso. And Belafonte publicly said he was not a Calypsonian. He said, if you want the real thing, go to Trinidad. People came to Trinidad. Americans want to add their flavor. They always have to add their value added to a product, which is part and parcel of this thing about, well, you don't understand accents, you have to smooth out the accent, you have to change the beat, they have to put something in.
If I may interject.
Please do. See, this will be Arthur Klein and I have this background for it.
I want to go back to Dominic's position on rapso is messagey.
Mm. No, remember, I asked the questions. I am never laying a position.
Sorry, I'm not
laying a position. I have to bring all different points of views through my questions. So sometimes I may ask a question that I think an audience member may want to ask, but it may not be my position.
I think if we were a culture and a population of keeping records, we would see that Trinidad is probably one of the most successful countries in the history of the Caribbean. In terms of recording industry.
Mm-hmm. 100 years plus.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
If you look at the first platinum record, as you said, Harry Belafonte, Calypso. But at the same time, around that time, we had a number of Calypsonians being signed by the big bands in the big band days in New York. We had a number of Calypsonians performing in Buckingham Palace, mm-hmm. right?
And based Europe, abroad, unlike Resistance, abroad, who stayed here.
Right? We even had a Calypsonian who they call the Six Beatle, who was very instrumental.
Lord Woodbine, the first, right? Six, yeah.
Let's Woodbine, go back. Yeah. Let's talk about the first platinum record in Europe, Winifred Atwell.
Winifred Atwell.
Again, you posted something about, you know, the Lady Scott, you know, in terms of
Scott.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. We can also go back to Mark and Kate Kisoon, who is the mm-hmm. children of Freddie Kisoon, who were on the top of the Pops in UK with what's the name of the song?
I can't remember the name of the song.
But and they're still singing. Katie Kisoon is still singing.
Background for Roger Waters and Old Town, that kind of thing.
And Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. Right? If we start to analyze Billy Ocean. Mm-hmm. If somebody actually compiled the successes alone, even in hip hop, right? Mm-hmm. Special Ed from Carnage, you'll go on and on, right? So when we have this way of always sort of pulling down ourselves, and that's the thing, from doing so much work in Jamaica, I realize that they have on us. They, even with musicians, when the 90s came around and the technology changed and one and two producers building beats, right? We were just throwing away our musicians who built the music, who found out the formulas that worked for soca.
We like fads, you know. Today, right? Tomorrow is another something.
So there are
numbers. You know, it's argued that the Trinidadian was one of those responsible for
Lord Laro
for taking.
Yeah.
Before Laro.
Neil and Tate, you're talking about
Neil and Tate.
Creating that reggae sound.
Neil and Tate.
What was his name?
So it's so much, right? And this is something to feel good about and feel overjoyed about. And even when Resistance was speaking, there's like in summer alone right now, there's over 150 festivals
yeah.
in UK alone, mm-hmm. in England, right? Mm-hmm. And if I was to kind of list the amount of festivals, Resistance literally had people picking up dirt and mm-hmm. saying sorry and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, because, and that's the balance with Jamaica. As much as there's dancehall, you have a number of reggae artists, young artists. Like I was telling, I'm going to call a name, Young Mohammed Muakil, mm-hmm. right? I met him in 2005.
Yes.
And he was doing what I would call
Freetown Collective.
What I would call BET. BET Point. But Mos Def had a program
mm-hmm.
called Def Poetry
Jam.
And a lot of our youths were, you know, who were trying to do the poetry, was basically performing it in an American accent.
Yes. Yes.
Right? And I remember being very harsh.
He was a poet before he was a singer.
Mm. With him on our first meeting, because he kind of orates someone. I was like, you have a little talent, but you're not going to go anywhere with that. Because, one, I when you see something in somebody, right, you have to be harsh with them. And I remember seeing his face, being very shocked. And I gave him like 2 to 3 weeks to come back and, you know, orate. You know, you could do it. And that led to him performing.
Discovering his style, his right? Trinidadian style.
And not only that, he was a UWE student at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he started training shows in UWE, right? That was UWE Speak. And that basically dominoed into a lot of UWE students doing poetry in a Trinidadian accent. So, and you're true to your power. So I want to go back also to, at that time, when they were developing, I was showing them some new artists coming out of Jamaica, right? And because of the system that they have designed, mm-hmm. which basically patterned our early system, right? That in probably 6 months, as a young man in Jamaica, now starting out, can tour the world, tour European, because they will make money in Jamaica. Two, there's a quota. So you put together a band and then you go forward. It's very hard for the young artists in Trinidad because there's no structural support in terms of the politics, in terms of the legislation, right? As a young man, I took a loan for $180,000 from Scotiabank to do my first independent album. Right, and I had to hit the streets selling it in a knapsack to pay the loan, because one, somebody in a radio station don't like you, or you didn't want to, you know, come under, didn't want them to produce your album, right, or to buy it over. That is the kind of dumb stuff that was going on at that, and that songs that same album had later down in the year, because, you know, God Send the Rain and them kind of thing, had big songs, had huge songs. So sometimes I wonder who else that is happening to. It has changed the framework of youth culture in this country, and somewhat the way we have pride in ourselves, because the dance all you hear on radio today that we have adopted, right? I can tell you, gun lyrics and dagger in lyrics is legislated not to play on Jamaica radio. The throwaway music, which is the street music, right? Everything has its place, so I ain't dunging on anything, right? That a DJ will sit down 3 hours editing out the curse words and the killing words and the gun words to play on our radio station, and every youth in the ghetto have a little Me Too phone listening to it. That's their Bible. That's one of the biggest problems we have right now, that is creating a certain mindset. That have songs where saying, all my friends are killers, the evil, the murderers, and you don't want to believe the levels that going on right now in terms of the way they're accepting this as the new Bible, right? So in terms of identity, the loss of identity, the loss of income, because that still goes back to the crime rate, you know, because if I'm a young person with a musical dream and the legislation doesn't cover it, because politics leads everything, right? I could end up a criminal on the road. To survive, this is why, one, you cannot judge, and we really have to examine the infrastructure, right? Right now, I think I want to hand over the mic because I'm probably talking a little too long.
No, but you've raised several points, you know, that one could take a tangent on. But let's take the point that you're raising about the influence or the impact of some of these kind of lyrics that are being imposed in the listening ear of young people that is potentially contributing to the crime rate in Trinidad and Tobago.
Very much so. I agree.
Yeah. And that is part of referred in an article in today's Express.
Yeah.
You know, is that part of what you were trying to say in your 2011 piece, Ganja, Guns and Girls?
The Ganja, Guns and Girls was written somewhere around 2005 in Grafton studio, sitting in the yard waiting for my next studio session, right? And I remember when I sang it for Mikey Bennett, he was like, yo, Trinidadian, no, Trinidadian, that's a classic, right? Because Jamaicans are like that. They just love music. They don't care about if your name big or not, you know? And I recorded it, and Jamtek wanted to remix it. But in writing the song, I was, even as far back as 2005, I was starting to see, I was seeing the similarities as to where our population is going and where our youth culture is going, and some of the same similarities with Jamaica and the way the construct is. We're talking about music business now. We're talking about the post-colonial construct, right? So that song was about that. Some of the fishes in the structure that create the circumstance that would bring forth a ghetto youth with a certain mindset, or a zessa, as we want to say. So I don't, in terms of the questions that were asked, you know, and the way that I answered.
You mean for the article?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Some of it I don't think was, because of the way the editing happens, mm-hmm. it's sort of confusing now, in it, you know, so. But it happens at times with articles, you know. But my investigation has always been, you know, for instance, Flood. When I sang Flood was a political DT, you know, basically taking a jab at the fact that we don't get water in Chinapu but for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to a question that you asked in terms of how, in terms of an art form, you have to use your savvy and your writing ability to make it, you know, to make people want to be attracted to it. And that's why I came up with such a humorous line, you know, in terms of Flood. And some people think it's just a song about telling a lion as humor, but it's actually not. It's a jab at the government, because if you're a young person, you have a water tank and you only get water Sunday and part of Thursday morning. You know, by Friday, a water tank could be empty. You might have an interview for a job or late for an exam. These are things that affect youths, right? You want me to continue, right? You have to examine things like even SEA, right? It has been banned in England from since 1974. Yes, we have the 1962 Concordat where 20% remains for the board. Right, so if you have 20% of 20,000, that is 4,000 children every year who probably not getting a space, right? And let's say if 500 fall through the cracks because they didn't go to vocational schools or the junior sex and whatnot, you have to examine which areas they come from. If those areas have something as simple as water, right, you have to examine the coalition between that and the murder rate that is 500 every year. If there is a connection, we can't ask the murdered guys, because if did you do good in common entrance, were you one of those kids that didn't pass and didn't continue schooling, because they're dead. We can't ask them. But these are things, when you really want to change a society, when you really want to change some of the problems, you have to look at. I remember I've been doing some research Eric Williams made a speech that he wanted to disband it in 1981, and he died just before.
Yes.
Right? So we have an archaic system of education where young people that come from politically neglected areas, it's not working for them, and it's leading on to a life of crime. Right? Music sometimes is the thing that open your mind, give you some hope, make you feel better. And if it is, we are fighting our own identity when it comes to music and up for lyrics. Mm-hmm. Then we have a sort of perfect storm in which you are seeing now. I call in the article, I said, political neglect is our biggest local university, and we are now seeing the graduates. You know?
Over now, a lot of your following, your market, are people who are socially conscious. Do you find that enough of the artists and the younger emerging artists in the art form are clever enough writers, as Ataclan is suggesting in describing some of the lyrics of his songs? Sometimes we may write and have a direct message and so on, but the verse and so on may not be cleverly written. Do we spend time in educating and training some of these emerging artists?
Well, I find some of the younger artists could educate me. Yep. Because in terms of writing, I mean, I hear some fantastic work coming right through. Even in this arena where they're doing it for prize money and thing, but putting the prize money aside and the template where they're using, you see the spoken word people, yep, and them, man, yes, the quality of lyrics and the flow and the, yeah, hello. You know, and I just feel good. My heart is swelled with pride, mm-hmm, and joy when I hear the young people and them and how they're writing. Now, to me, the challenge is, where is that going? Where is it? Is there any space for it to come through? You know, or our radio stations, when it's carnival time, obsessed with playing just the music for people to jump and have a good time and drink some rum and you know, that kind of thing. That is the challenge we have.
Something I keep wondering, we spoke to the confining soap, perhaps rap soap and so on.
Oh, sorry. One of the things that I keep pondering on is when we speak to the issue of confining soca to carnival traditionally, and it still exists today, and other art, parts of the art form, why is chutney not confined to anything? Meaning a season. Does chutney have a season? And that's local.
But I think the chutney artists don't have the same challenge, you know.
Because the
stations that play.
I never hear about a season.
But maybe they don't articulate it as we do. I can't speak for them, but they have the same challenge. As a matter of fact, once you're in the music arena here in Trinidad and Tobago, you have that challenge. So if you're in business with calypso and thing, and you like a little gospel thing, if you just do rock, it have plenty of rock band, and the rock band and them don't hear themselves on the station, that's right, just play rock.
Right.
And that's on the station being rock.
One of the challenges is right across the board. One of the metaphors I always use is like boxing. Boxing has its ups and downs, meaning crowd come out, they don't come out, people dips that. And boxing, every once in a while, they find a superstar. They literally create a superstar. Meaning I'm Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, Klitschko, the White Hope. But the idea, they're doing it on purpose. Why don't we have superstars? So let's say, I'm talking like, Soka has a Marshall, a Bungie, a this, a that, or the other. An Iowa. Why is it that, let's say, Rapso do not have, they can't, I haven't seen superstars. I mean, we have...
Rapso have icons like themselves.
No, we have to you. Icons. No. I'm talking about, I'm talking about iconic figures. We have iconic figures in every genre.
Hmm.
But I'm talking about superstars who Marshall could walk on the stage any day, any month, any year, any
hour. Well, at the moment, it might be Freetown Collective.
At the moment, it might be
Freetown Collective.
At the end of the day, that's what you're looking for, right?
What, the commercial value of the thing?
The commercial
value. But see, it depends. within the Rapture arena, two things we never do. One was chase behind competition and the titles that go with it.
Okay.
And in doing so, a lot of people say we're stupid because by doing the competition, you would establish a space where the general public would acknowledge what you do, and they'd put a price tag and say what you do, and lift the commercial value of same. But are we doing what we do for the commercial value?
Let's go back resistance.
Yes,
let's go back to the actual conversation. Right? The two guys that wanted to do it was the Raga Soca competition.
Raga Soca and Rap Soca.
It was Raga. You see, people don't know, you know, the history. And this is one of the things. I'll tell you, before I go to that, I'll tell you this. Young people in this country who, again, was a little bit, you know, in terms of their identity musically, misled. When Kindred and myself started basically mixing rap so with on and putting it on soca beats, like entering rap so in the which resistance has done as well in early the 90s arena, right? Mm-hmm. In the soca arena. The young men who were doing dance all at that point in time, KMC, Bungie, Maximus, they saw what we could do this too.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened, you know. Mm-hmm. Right? I remember being a big part of even KMC development. I remember KMC staying frustrated up in St. Barb's. I live in Dong and Chinapu, and I remember bringing him home by me and saying, listen, this is the format that Shorty I show me with soca.
Mm-hmm.
And by the next year, he had two songs. They were playing a slow one and on radio, Soca Bashment, and it was a fast one. And I was telling Marshall Montano, listen, you need to play this song, because at that point in time, all the soca bands were still singing covers,
mm-hmm.
right? It wasn't like I was singing my own set yet. They were still cover singers. Mm-hmm. Rap soul artists weren't...
Yeah.
We were ahead in terms of what we were bringing to the plate, and it interjected such a strong, positive youth energy that dancehall singers in Trinidad wanted to sing soca. Mm-hmm. Right, and even some of the biggest soca artists' songs were written by rap soul artists.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many times when I go and do an interview and I come to release my little soca song, a mango says, "So you're a rap soul artist or you're a soca man? Which one?" And I don't hear anybody asking Gallen, "So you're a raga soca artist or you're a soca man?" I don't hear anybody asking Marshall, you know, "You're a calypso, no, you're a soca man." These little divisions and perceptions are so strange, you know.
Is that not branding?
You have to remember. Hold on, let me get to my point, right? Yeah. We were approached by the two guys, right? Let's have this rap soul raga soca competition.
Yeah, sure.
I remember talking to Mario and saying to Resistance, I don't see myself taking my God given gift and fighting your God given gift for money.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that understanding amongst us. And the first, you know, and at that point in time, I had some of the hugest songs in the country, right? And even Kindred. So the thing is, I remember Bungie won, Tricanal came second, right? But we were not about that competition life.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have hampered,
let's say, rap so commercially?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think. It would have hampered us as individuals as well.
Yeah, it did.
There's something that I also want to interject in that we're talking about the media, and of course we're in a radio station and thing, but one of the other areas of the media is that thing called the print media, right? And writing about something, right? Certainly a lot of North American genres, jazz, hip-hop, rap, country, they have publications dedicated specifically to those genres of music, right? We don't have any publications for our music. We have some online editions, Soca News and some other things like Jazz in the Islands. But the idea of having well-written articles on the music, on the industry, the back and forth of rap, so chutney, soca, whatever it is, it's not something that's general. Certainly in print media, one of the newspapers actually has abandoned their whole features department and outsourced it, right? So there's not even a selling point for newspapers. Newspapers don't see writing about rap, so writing about soca as a thing. Which is unfortunate.
Maybe just as well, because traditional media may well be disappearing.
Well,
and you may be on the right track because you deliver a regular podcast. features on the music industry.
And we had Freetown Collective.
This is my personal view.
By the way, while you're here, tell how do we access your podcast?
podcast.iradio.tt
Brother Resistance and Ataclan, this is my personal view, and I've said it before on the radio. I believe Raps is the vehicle to make it internationally.
When you walk the streets, people believe, but it's not happening.
I don't know. Hold on. Let me tell you. I honestly believe what is not happening. I believe
you're uninformed.
I'm talking about
Certain things.
I'm talking about.
The reason why Tyson was a mega star, right? Has to do a lot with his past as a boy. The things that he went through. Right, his truth, right, and of course an amazing coach, right?
No, but it was the storyteller who told the story.
But he also won fights.
The idea is that they created a superstar. They created an image and so on.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. But in the early 2000s, when soccer started to go to another place, another level, locally, right, you have to remember B-Mobile, Digicel, Blue Waters, Carib. I've turned down over $200,000 in alcohol offers for deals, right? Till they went and get a guy who was singing like my voice and did ads, right? And you have to understand, we stand for some things, right? And it's not about, if it was about Resistance saying, it's about me and I'm going to try and get all I could get, we would have made those decisions to say, let's go.
I had a company in court, I wouldn't have called the name.
Right.
Right? Because they wanted me to ring the bell for their product. Ring the bell.
Yeah, I remember that story. Right.
And when I refuse, they come and they bring a man a voice, just like that. They bring a man a voice singing just like me.
Right.
That's to ring the bell.
Right.
I had to go to court, cut to court. I had a bona fide court member. I had to take court to court for the same situation. So be not. It depends on where your head is at, where you stand. What you're doing the music what is your mission?
Commercial success has to be measured by something, right? What I'm gathering from what you're discussing, it's like you're not hearing it. So it's a matter of airplay.
Right. No, I'm not talking about the song itself. I'm not hearing the story of success.
Again, somebody has to tell a story.
Right? But you have to have a story to tell, and you do have a story to tell. But you need storytellers.
You need opportunity to tell the stories, and this morning is one.
Look at it. But let's say you refer to like the couple sponsors and so on. People, the commercial sector follow where they feel the money is. You know that the money going them follow. That's the modus operandi. That's the reason for living. But the idea is that, so if they see you have that commercial success, them running you down. I mean, they offer there, as you said, different whatever it is. But that's at the individual level.
I'm talking about industry level.
You're
talking from a perspective of a bystander, right? A layman. We have these stories that I can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
In Trinidad and Tobago, in terms of licensing, right? Maybe I don't get airplay, but in terms of licensing, I probably have the biggest license for a song in an ad, and an international ad, out of any artist, any soca artist, period.
Those are things that are not necessarily.
And those are things
we don't
performed in a couple of the biggest or hugest festivals in the world, from Southwest to Glastonbury. I've worked with some of the biggest international producers, right? I've charted in Jamaica.
I'm speaking about Rapso.
Yeah, but you're speaking about Rapso. We defend
Rapso.
No.
Yeah, but I'm not speaking about what Ataclan might have contributed. In the days of the 50s, we referred to Belafonte. We were hearing about Calypso.
Right.
And this is what they titled Calypso. And then there's a period, you heard this Sparrow type, and then you heard this, and then you had, and that was the Marshall in terms of soca and so on. And their stories, I'm talking about allowed.
Okay, let me say something.
There is a place for the idea of a publicist, and there is a place for the idea of marketing. Let's understand something. What Resistance and Ataclan are saying is that the message is not getting out there because what I'm hearing is there aren't opportunities, and when they do publish it, it is not accurate 100%, right? So the stories are not told. This is an opportunity to get that story out, right? Mm-hmm. But this is just one in 365 days. I don't know how many often you're going to have this kind of conversation.
And I'm glad you're having it in July and not in Carnival time, because this is the other thing that has happened. We have to hear about music outside of Carnival.
It's a number of things, because like even for instance, you have one person having shares in multiple stations. And
that,
on the
that
board
exists.
And on the board of Trinidad Broadcasting, and we know that you want to monopolize artists and stuff. If they have a problem with you, and they send a memo to the DJ pool, you're not going to get airplay. Don't matter how talented you are. And the thing is, most of the times, if you're not owned, or you don't agree to let somebody own you or make or you're gonna be sidelined. And funny enough, Rapso practitioners have a couple of rebellious people, because we do truth music.
Yeah.
Right? If a certain beer company call me tomorrow, which I've had offers, right? And the staff, which are working class people, basically strike for a couple of weeks, and the ownership class owner say, well, Ole stay on Ole strike. I will fire all Ole and hire a new staff, because basically the staff want a dollar raise and pay. If that person, people call me the next day and say, yo, we want you to promote this beer with your song, and I will say no. But we have soca artists who will say yes, because they can't say no because of their managers, right? And
because they're hungry.
Right, so you have to ask yourself, do we want to be represented by our honest music, by a music that could help the youth, or a music that you don't understand the backstories of? You understand? So my thing, your comment is like when the journalist asks Bob Marley, so you're rich? And he asks you, what is riches? Money?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have them. My riches is life. You know what I mean?
What is your riches?
My riches.
Getting the music, the lyrics out? What is your riches?
Well, according to you, it have none.
But Ataclan, I want to ask you a question. In light of what you said about... Let's go the structure of the radio industry in Trinidad and Tobago, and who owns and who dominates and who has could blacklist you and that kind of stuff. Have you and your fellow Rapso artists devised a business model that is different from the kind of standard business model that I'm going to get my music played on radio to make it?
You see, the fact that I'm still here, resistance still here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's what we'll say, when people used to see them come, see them go, right? But I'll tell you this, if you didn't have something which is called... If you didn't have something in your music, the very same star quality that he's talking about, stars and mega stars.
Yeah, stars and superstars.
No, there are artists who have had millions of dollars in investments by certain sectors of this society, and still, you wouldn't see them in Glastonbury. You wouldn't see them in the European. We have a diasporic music, right? And true, when a song surpassed the diaspora, then you start to say, oh, good, wow. You know, we are not having that. Right? That's one thing. It's so much facets in terms of why some things work and why some things don't work, right? In terms of Rapso working, Rapso is actually probably the strongest genre in Trinidad, because it is so strong. Let me tell you something. You talk about free tongue, right? I can tell you, he's saying marketing, but I could also tell you it has to do with support. When Mohammed was training you, we speak from 2005 to 2010. By 2011, most of those students are working in the ministries, right? So who are they going to look around and call, right? That is a big part of their popularity right now, because you would have seen their face in a lot of ministry gigs, right? And it has to do with connections, right? So whether it is fair or not, or you have a structure now that they can get a certain amount of visibility, right? So you have to break down and analyze things in the truthful way, and not just like, okay, yeah, he big from the papers, and is because things can be very misleading in Trinidad when everybody in so much different parts and sectors of this society have an agenda to carry out. Our agenda is just truth, and hoping that the youths can get their own identity in check, because many times they're being misled. I remember Shorty had a line, what you feed your mind with forms your characteristics, and as in watch out my children. Exactly. And you're seeing it now actually manifesting today with just pure killing going on.
What are Kongsin, or your opinion, Trikanal is Rapso, what accounts for Three Canals, let's say, consistent presence?
Funding.
They own the world. I don't know what's their model. I don't know if you're familiar with their model. I don't
Three
know
Canal if you're familiar. Probably had one of the biggest shows every mm-hmm. year in the Carnival. And they could have it out of Carnival also. Whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever support that they have from the ministry and different. Mm-hmm.
They do get funding.
But the point is, what about them? Is it because the music is so good, so different, original?
I've just answered your question. Yeah. No. Visibility. Now, listen, for instance, if...
Visibility and relationships.
Music business
is a hustle. If Kindred, relationships mm-hmm. are more important sometimes than talent. Let's get that clear.
No, you're trying to put words in the fellas.
The music industry is more about relationships sometimes than talent.
Dominic Kaliprasad. Let us state for the record that right now Nigel is being facetious and it has nothing to do with the opinions of resistance.
That is Nigel Campbell's opinion.
No, but I think it's important.
Relationships are critical.
Let me be provocative here. Could part of the problem be that, unlike artists of, let's say, the 70s, that the contemporary artists have lost the fire to battle for airplay and so on? Because, as you posted recently, mm-hmm. I remember somewhere in the 70s, there were artists out on the streets marching. There were artists out in the street marching for 1999. But there was a time when artists were vociferous and battling.
Would artists do that now? What I want to say is, for artists to have to do that now is an embarrassment to the entire nation. And that is the sad thing about it. You know, it's just, when the artists come out in the street and the artists lobby for 50% local content, it's not an artist problem, you know. There's a national problem. That's a policy problem of ourselves as an independent nation, that you can't even see the importance of putting your creative output alongside on an equal basis to the music that's coming in from foreign
and the policy makers at the time ignored those sentiments of the artists. And they said, no, we're not putting everybody it in the broadcast policy.
Everybody was there, you know. I remember putting out my first independent album. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I took a loan for $180,000 from Scotia.
You're lucky to get a bank loan
The reason why I got the loan is because I was refused three times, and the lady refused me the bank. Her boyfriend was a DJ, and when she went to him, like, she was feeling like a little hoe, and he said no, but he had the biggest album last year, and that's how she called me back.
Is he?
And took it's a chance.
Relationship.
But my point is this. My point is this. I was a young man living with his grandma, right? Who understand what it is to come up in Mova Lavanto, the Chinapu village. Right, I was going to Trinity College. We were selling in the Eastern Market craft. I used to paint on clothes. She would sell craft. At one point we were even selling juice on Charlotte Street. Right, so it was always a serious road, and to take loans to do music, a song could cost you back then $5,000-$10,000. Now it could cost you $15,000-$20,000. Right, and to have to pay a loan. Right, and there is no outlet because of politics for airplay. And if a guy, and it creates a loophole for the service providers and certain private people even in media to say, if you want to pass, let me executive produce you. This is our exploitation that has been happening, right? And the artists that survive independently could even write a book, and the book is a success story. It is not a story of defeat, no. Understand where I'm coming from, right? Sometimes you hear a name, right? It doesn't mean that they're talented or they're not talented. Sometimes it means that they could even be getting exploited to a point where they would not even develop properly, right? They might just be, for instance, like somebody called me from the ministry. Right, twice, Carrie Fester. I am the reason to learn myself is the reason why Carrie Fester started a youth arm. And I was basically offered $2,000 to perform, right? Now, if you put five of my hits together, there's a half an hour, or any artist, if you could never put together a band for $2,000, right? You have hits, you have national hits, right? But there's information that there are groups that have 10 performances at $20,000 already allocated.
$20,000
right?
each?
Yeah, one group. Right, and that's because of connections in the ministry. Mm-hmm. Now, a program director called me and offered me $2,000 for the opening of Emancipation. The minister will be there, and I in our country, I was like, you know, I like the minister, you know, but they're making the minister look bad.
Yeah,
right, I'm not going to call names,
yeah,
but with almost 30 years in the industry and hits and toying and performing in some huge festivals.
What that tells me is an insult. What that also
and he didn't
suggests,
only call me, mm-hmm. he called other people who've been complaining. What is this?
That suggests to me that certainly part and parcel of the problem also is that understanding what the business is and understanding the value of the business. There are people who have roles in terms of putting on events that haven't got a clue. The fact that they could offer is at a client $2,000 means they don't know. They just figure, well, I ain't had a hit for the last month or two.
What performance?
So we go just give him a little something to tie them over.
Let's talk about the technocrats in the business now, right? Mm-hmm. When you're singing for almost 30 years,
mm-hmm.
you see government putting money for the growth of the industry. Right?
Start me up on that.
I'm telling you, I'm not ashamed. You see, the thing is, part of why some people don't like rap swat is because we talk the truth. We want to see a change for better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if they make me out as a monster, mm-hmm. right? If I'm seeing technocrats, and your job is to assist our artists or mm-hmm. to facilitate growth.
Yes.
Right?
Output so, growth according
right,
to them.
Facilitate mm-hmm. output growth because of tourism.
Mm-hmm.
At the point a young Gazette have an album, or a band called 12, if they spend money on a brilliant album, it is at that point you say, all right, 12's lead singer, Sheldon. Okay, Sheldon, you have an album that represents some of the best local producers and musicians at this point in time. What can we do? Here what I would do. I would buy ads in a foreign magazine. I would contact a lawyer in LA who has links to some agents from reggae to the river to European events. It's that kind of a business. You support who is ready, the best of who is ready. Hold on, I get into another point here. You don't start an in-house contract because we in Trinidad, we know how the thing does run, right? I have a big problem right now with what's going on with some, I'm not going to call the name of the facility, nor the
Watch your words.
Yes. Or the program. But I have a huge problem right now with a facility gathering up some young artists who are brilliant, paying them $500 for a performance.
For 20 minutes.
Right, for 20 minutes. Performance is a thing. You had to look good on stage. You had to buy a nice jacket. You know what I mean? So, and the money that is coming from government, it is not for in-house contracting and to put my friend go handle the song system, triple the money. This kind of madness going on, and it is affecting the growth of a music industry.
What you're suggesting is that the state's role in the development of the music industry is behind the curve, as it was. We know this. The state has had its hand in trying to develop an outward and exportable music industry since the 90s. TIDCO, IDCO, music, TTN, Music DT, right?
Well, there is the same thing.
Right. For the record, Dominic, just for the record, let it be noted that Brother Resistance and Atta Clan called no names in their conversation. You know, so all
these are
all
the state
legal,
enterprises.
Well,
which are public.
Angel is a music analyst. So
these are state enterprises which are publicly funded and which have had a role and a mandate to develop the music industry locally, right? There are problems. And as we could see, since the 90s, we've been asking to get this thing happening, and we've been looking out and seeing, well, you got a bite here and bite there. It's private sector people who put stars out there.
Mm-hmm.
An artist himself, he's an artist, he's been working hell hard for 30 plus years since he was too young to soak it now. He's doing it on his own.
he's asking other artists, well, follow my lead, controversy or otherwise. That's the, what is that to me is what the music's supposed to happen, right? We have another artist, an elder, who has backing, European money that has gone behind her. Now she's winning awards and all that kind of stuff. One or two artists is not an industry. And that has been a kind of a conversation that has been happening. There is a role for the private sector. The private sector looks for profits. Are those profits coming forth based on what's... It's almost like a vicious cycle going on here, a vicious circle. And we may not, or may or may not be doing it right. And to me, the technology is evading us and the whole global industry has gone away from us.
We have been in the wicket over 100 years, you know. You know that, right?
We're still holding on to the 1990s models.
Here what is going to happen in the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. right? Because of your statements, not resistance of myself.
spell my name correctly.
Right? There's going to be a new symposium where a lot of money is going to be spent to fly in some professionals mm-hmm. and they're going to spend like $300,000 on doing that to repair what probably was said here.
We have,
and it happens every year.
A draft music policy, which I've been trying to get via the Freedom of Information Act, right? Since 2017, it has been completed. The ministry has said, well, it's in a draft form, and I guess cabinet has approved the final draft. As a consequence, it can't be made public. That draft, I have seen a copy of it. Somebody in the ministry showed me a copy, and they had a revision of it and thing. Effectively, what is happening is, the industry is being underfunded. A ministry's role, as I keep saying this, is to create an enabling environment. It is not to put on shows.
yeah.
It is not to put. It's not to compete with private sector.
Gentlemen, before we run out of time, we must allow our audience to participate.
Okay.
In this many discussion. Times uh-huh. the minister is not aware of this. Sometimes they make the ministers look bad.
It's policymakers yeah. and the workers. And
you think so?
Well, sometimes.
That's your call. That's your call.
All right, so let's invite the callers. 622-3937. We're taking the calls at 15 minutes to the hour of 2 o'clock. Take to the second edition with a Goetz
Rapso.
Rapso. Mm-hmm. That was the question.
Good afternoon.
No, yet.
Oh, I see. Well, we'll do that in a moment.
Yeah.
Yes, you're talking about the government responsibility being
creating an enabling environment. Are things like, you know, updating a broadcast policy, promulgating the broadcast code, which is still in draft for about 15 years or some kind of thing like that. Developing links between the financial sector and the creative sector to allow for ease of manufacture production, whatever it is. Passing legislation that makes sense to us. We pass a lot of legislation because it's imposed upon us. FATCA is a classic example.
Let's take a call. Caller, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon to the generals there.
The generals.
The Iconics.
Brother Resistance.
Yeah, brother.
And the other gentleman there as well.
Nigel Campbell.
Hello.
Yeah, good day. Yeah, what I would like to see, in truth and in fact, you would consider Canada a first world country, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, we always here down in the Caribbean and things like to take our cue from North America or Europe or some kind of thing. You said something just now by the resistance about the decolonizing. But this is one time I want you to colonize. Because, you know, it's like 50% local content must be played on Canadian stations.
That's right.
33% actually. But go ahead.
How much?
It's 33% and it varies a lower amount in certain genres of music. But go ahead.
Right. How much we have here? Where's the ratio here?
There's no legislated quota system here. And let me just mention something. There's no legislated quota in Jamaica also, but Jamaican DJs take their music seriously.
Exactly. And the point is, if we had to take it there, we had to take it, as you say, it's not just about the artist, about Trinidad and Tobago in general, and we benefiting from that same approach, right? But I would like to see all genres, from Panman, Jazzman, Sokaman, Kaisoman, Rapsoman, all the man and them, pull up the savannah, you understand? Demanding that we get that ratio play on the radio station. Otherwise, we ain't going no way in a hurry. And I'd also like to see a Woodstock are the local genres taking place here in this country sometime in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Next caller on the line. Yes. So, Brother Resistance, Ataclan, tell me, what's next on your agenda?
Well, you know, I'm constantly recording, writing. I'm in a writing mood right now and recording. And, you know, we're recording for the next carnival season because it's already July. Mm-hmm. You know, so we prepare. You know,
what kind of topics are you writing about? Am I allowed to ask that?
some song teeth hunting.
So, is it, will it be continuing in the social commentary line, or do raps or singers sing about love?
Oh yeah, of course. Man. You must take a pair of visit to my YouTube channel. It's called Ataclan Official. You know, there's a lot of love songs. That's the thing, and that was the thing about rap. So I want to come back to you, Nigel. Hmm. You know, call my partner, my friend. You know, we'd call some huge soca artists, but there were times that I've been in, let's say, a foreign festival where, you know, media would follow this person, and the response that the rapso man get to where the soca man get wouldn't come back, you know, wouldn't come, like, no media follow us. Mm. Right? So when Resistance go and mash up a thing, or if that is so, and then you have to ask now, if a soca album is, and this has been an argument for a very long time, and it is evident with some, maybe your biggest soca artist, like, you have to ask yourself and be honest, right? Has he delivered an album to, and this is my friend, right? Has he delivered an album to an international label after being signed about 3 times, right? Is soca in the way that our media tries to portray it palatable to the international market that goes beyond the diaspora? And that is one of the strong points of our rapso artists. This is why Resistance albums, Kindred could have been in Reggae on the River. We are more, it's not like more or less, but if you appreciate yourself and more of your stories and work on your craft to deliver such, then, you know, and that is one of the points I wanted to
no,
to
and that's why, and that's, you see what you just,
and that's success,
why,
my friend.
No, right, no, I hear that. No, but, and that's why I sincerely believe that Rapso Ready is the what you just described there. That's how I deeply feel that Rapso is the vehicle, but somebody has to step on the gas.
Well, I ain't know what's stepping on the gas,
a little more than the other people you're describing there.
Who serves and what serves what agenda? Exactly. We have not been about people's agenda. We have just been about truth and putting out quality music, quality writing for a population that needs to see themselves. I grew up not seeing and hearing myself.
I still think there's a place for a lover. There's a word that's escaping me right now. That somebody's your champion. Let's use that. In a market, and
let's take a call. Caller?
Okay. Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Yes. A caller compared our music to the Canadian genre and music in Canada. But our music, how does that, our culture, how does that benefit our society? When we hear music like, Loose Like Lucy, huh? And Sparrow Mimi, and all these things. Can they play that in Canada? These vulgar songs? Kicking she back down, all kind of things. How does that benefit our society when we have an increase in young girls' teenage pregnancy?
Thank you, caller, for participating. Nigel, you're raising a good point, I think, about the need for a champion.
Yes, as I said, I think that what has happened in terms of a lot of quote-unquote, certainly looking at the North American market, and there's a quote, a foreigner, an outsider who got in, and the classic example you always use, of course, is Mali. And in a sense, we could also
tying Rihanna's ascension, as it was. She had a champion. Rihanna started with a kind of tropical kind of thing. Her first album had songs. She was just a singer, pretty little singer. And then she kind of just sang pop music, dance music, all that kind of stuff. So they just created a product, effectively the biggest artist in the digital age, right? But as I was saying, in terms of the Mali and early reggae, Chris Blackwell was the man who stood up for that music, right? For a lot of Trinidad music, whether it's calypso, soca, rap, so as I said, chutney, Caribbean jazz, whatever it is, it's a harder road to toe, I think, because we don't have that one champion who's big. We have Straker, we have Charlie, who've been really doing the work for us out there in America.
But there are stories, Nigel, that many labels over the years were asking, even Julian, I don't want to call names, you're going to put me in trouble, but there are a lot of stories that the older artists tell you. Like, I have a story from...
But my thing is this, right?
No, we have to talk facts about the timeline and certain facts. You see, because we could mislead people, right? We have champions locally. You cannot just discard the amount of money that like, let's say somebody's...
Call names. But even in terms of the direct in the industry,
the work of
Robert Amar, the work of Jamie Shell, and them in with you.
We can't discard those champions.
Christopher, I'm not saying that we don't have local champions. We're talking about this kind of outward expansion. It seems to be like a conversation that is permeating about
outward expansion. You're always, as an artist, you are always a foreign. What's the term? You're always a foreign commodity.
Yes.
So as they say,
and that's why you need
you
a champion
dance,
out there.
You have to dance at your, but the champions out
you
there.
Need a, well, you need a commission agent, effectively.
I'm trying to explain to you. The champions out there weren't necessarily champions all the time. They were still servicing the diaspora. And when the labels came knocking, they kept it.
To themselves.
Like, yeah. So it's like, I'm making my $1 million a year. If I open, I'm going to make that $1 million a year. And that has, I'm telling you, I don't want to put people on blast, but I have countless stories. I could tell you a story that an elder told me, right? Of a song that sold, and that's the next thing. Because of the information is not accessible to younger artists, we don't know what worked from what didn't work because of people and their agendas.
Media and information, right?
There was a soca song that sold 5 million in India and 1 million in South Africa, or vice versa. And this person told me themselves, right? But the particular producer did not pay a cent in terms of the royalty, and they bought a building in Brooklyn, right? And
music industry is full of
had studios.
Do not ever believe that the music industry is a nice industry.
I thought a culture of love.
You had to be careful. You had to be careful when you're saying certain things in terms of timeline and what's going on, because the youths and the new artists and the new musicians, they need to kind of figure out and navigate according to sometimes what even we're saying here right now. I want to thank you, Dominic.
Well, at the clan, now that he started to spill the tea and drop the juice,
time is up.
Just as he time to,
it's been nice
to say goodbye.
Thank but you so much.
The fact of the matter is, it is a struggle. The entertainment business is not an easy business.
Not easy, no.
And it's a long road. Mm-hmm. So my commendations to you all for persisting through the years and for coming today and participating in what I think is a value, has been a valuable discussion.
Thank you.
And do it more often.
Yes. And
for all genres.
Well, Nigel, you've been here before. You know I've done it quite a few times. So thank you very much for investing your Sunday afternoon in helping to educate the audience at a clan by the resistance.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.